Everybody, welcome back to Friendship Week. We are so happy that you're here. Everybody's coming in. And I might be most excited about today, although I'm also really excited about tomorrow. It's been a great week, you guys. On Monday, we talked about foundational concepts. On Tuesday, we introduced the first four tools in the toolkit. Yesterday, we did some mind mapping about strengths and interests so your kids can easily make friends who share their interests. Today, we're covering the second part of the toolkit, four more tools. And tomorrow, we're going to bring it all together, put all the tools into action, give you tips, next steps so your child can make their next friend. So, just love. When you have an idea for an event and it comes together so beautifully, and Caroline's been bringing the goods, and I just couldn't be more pleased. And you guys have been bringing great questions. So I'm just tickled how well this has been going. So, Caroline, I am so excited about our first tool today, which is talking about being silly and goofy. Because it's so interesting when people come into our community at Bright and Quirky. They're sort of like, my child isn't able to make friends. Why is that? And we really have to look at that social iceberg you talked about because it could be like with our autistic friends, they're maybe have lagging social intuition, or it could be with more of our sort of impulsive friends that they're being silly and goofy to a point that is not similar to their same age peers. And, this is such an interesting one, and most people don't talk about it. So take it away. This might be my favorite tool in the toolkit.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so glad. Hello, everyone. And so I want to just say a word as we get started because we actually have two self-regulation tools, and I would argue self-regulation affects everything. So for our kids out there and for our adults, a lot of people ask you to boss your body, be less silly, goofy. You know, rein it in. They say these different things and they don't really explain how. And that bothers me because I remember as a kid being like, well, I don't know what you want me to do, right? And we can be impulsive, but also it's hard to do something if you don't know how to do it and you don't know what people want and you don't know how your body works. So the first part of the lesson is just to explain a little bit about self-regulation that you can carry with you your entire life. So think of self-regulation as we all have sort of an internal elevator. And as we become more silly or we become more angry or we become more hyped up and activated, our internal elevator and our activation levels go up. Now, sometimes they keep going up until we explode. Sometimes we become sillier and sillier and sillier and sillier. But your body actually changes. So there's this misnomer that when you're impulsive, it's just like one, two, three, go. But I bet some of you out there can relate to this when I tell you that's not true. There are internal signals I call tells because they tell me something. And everybody's are different. And part of the silly goofy scale is us figuring out, and you might do this today, but you might do it over time. What are my tells? So when you become more activated and your elevator's going up, you actually, your blood pressure goes up. Your body chemistry changes. So for me, my chest becomes all red. Some people, your tummy, your stomach gets a little bit churny, right? Some people get jittery, right? Some people start talking really, 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 really fast. And I have a whole list in Why Will No One Play With Me of these different tells. But the biggest thing is that when we talk about self-regulation and people say, don't be so silly, we have to think about the fact that there's a lot that goes on to this. And the whole point of silly goofy scale is that I'm going to teach you how to create an experience where you get more silly, get more goofy, get more activated and hyped up, and then learn to bring yourself back down. So when people say calm, and I don't know about all of you at home, but sometimes when people say calm down, the kids I work with get really annoyed and irritated because they're like, stop telling me to calm down, right? So I'm not going to use that word because you're not really calming down. You're really bringing yourself back, right? You're bringing yourself back to where you were. So if you are like I was as a kid, sometimes you get a little silly, a little goofy, and it's hard to know if you're too silly or too goofy, right? So the first thing we're going to do is talk to your kid. Kids, think of this. How silly and goofy is too much? And I'm going to channel my internal Debbie because I think Debbie would say, hey, buddy, look around. Is anybody else this silly goofy? Right? Sometimes the joke goes too long, or like you're the only one laying on the floor rolling around thinking that it's funny. And the first thing parents and kid are going to do is you're going to role play the different levels of silly goofy. So there's totally in control. What does that look like in your body? And I'm referring now to my visual here that I have for my Bright and Quirky packet. There's like a little silly, right? Little silly's okay. Then there's getting too silly, a little too much. Then there's like way too much silly goofy. And I always picture that as like rolling around on the floor. But you're going to role play this, right? So ask the question, what does it look like? And then you guys are going to role play every stage. And then what does off the charts silly goofy look like? And it can be that you also think of a friend who does this. Go ahead, Debbie.
Okay, the question that's bubbling up for me and maybe is bubbling up for other parents is who decides what is too much?
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and I'll just say something about that because we had this issue in our family, and I was saying it was too much, and my son was not agreeing with me. So
Ooh.
I felt that I really needed like an external metric, if you will, to say, because yes, on the one hand, we want to say our kids are atypical, they should be themselves. But our goal here is making and keeping friends. So in my mind, too much is when we start to alienate our peers, or we're sliding into peer rejection. It's like our behavior has a ripple effect that might not be positive. Is that what you think?
Yeah, and I think again, channeling my inner Debbie, if I look around and nobody else is rolling on the floor and I'm rolling on the floor, and you can make a choice to be that way, but usually that's too much. And I've talked to lots of kids about this, all kinds of, geography, all kinds of around the world, kids who are young, kids who are older. And there comes a point where, when you constantly are the only one rolling around the floor, other kids think you're immature. And so it's also sometimes, and I'm not saying any of you out there would ever do this, but some of my clients sometimes like get so silly goofy, they're like pushing other people, maybe, sort of pushing on them, pushing into their personal space. And sometimes they say stuff they don't mean to say. And I would say that would cross into the too much. Like if I start kind of making fun of you, then that's going to be hurtful. And then the joke has gone way too far. But you
So
know
this,
what? I think we need to be social spies about this too.
Bingo.
Right? And let's
All the
observe
tools
other
are
kids.
working together.
Yeah, all of them
Yeah.
do.
Yeah, this
Right?
is
So
great.
I agree with you, Debbie. And I think every grade, this changes. So if you really want to do this well, my suggestion is be a social spy, look at your peers, figure out what they do. And you know what? There's certain topics that make us have the joke go on too long, right? And so if you know that, right, maybe it's great with your closest friend or your siblings, but maybe, you know, you get a little out of control with other people. And like I say, some of my clients like hit or say something they regret when they get too silly goofy. And I think it's important to think about each stage and have these conversations. And it can be fun. We don't, you know, we're not judging. We're all humans. And part of what I want you to do is have fun. So you are going to agree ahead of time after you role play on what are the strategies you're going to use. And they're all in Why Will No One Play With Me, but I'll tell you a few to bring you from this super activated level back down. Okay. Breathing, easiest one. Taking that really deep breath, letting it out. Okay. There's also people who like to do things like they like to walk around the yard a couple times, right? Jumping jacks, little known fact, jumping jacks actually like flush the activation out of you. I got that from the great Dr. Stuart Shanker, who I bet Debbie knows, who wrote a book called Self-Reg that is fabulous. And if you haven't read it, it's fabulous. Whatever you want to do to bring your activation down, let's decide ahead. Because what you're going to do is what I call simulation, which is like pretend. You're going to go in the backyard, go somewhere where you have control, it's private. If you don't have a backyard, you can go to the park, but I wouldn't go at like peak time, right? And you're going to pick something to do that gets you all hyped up, right? So bounce on a trampoline, play with water balloons, run around the yard, right? You're going to do something that gets you all activated, all hyped up, which is basically what happens when you're silly goofy. And then parents, when you see that they are becoming way too silly goofy, you're going to step in, and everybody knows ahead of time, hey, at that moment, I'm going to step in and you're going to say, let's use our strategies and let's bring ourselves back down. And I always say, collaborate on this, right? Some kids, they don't like the word calm. Some kids, I just want to send you a hand signal and you'll do it, right? Some kids want you to do it with them and co-regulate. And I think that is absolutely the best way. Like co-regulating means while they're breathing, you're breathing, and your calm helps them calm. And my suggestion also is that you ask them how they feel in their body at that moment. Now, I know some of our friends have alexithymia and can't tell you, but if they can, the more we can know our body signals and those tells, the more I can get control of this.
I think to scaffold this, we could say to our kids, I use the word dysregulated, but I'm not sure what you word you use for
I do
silly
too.
goofy.
Yep.
Okay. I could say, buddy, you're showing me some tells that you're dysregulated. What's I and I call it a cool down plan. What's on your cool down plan that you can do right now?
Yep.
Because when you're in it, when your blood pressure is going up and your adrenaline's running, we don't have that metacognition to say, oh, I'm dysregulated. I should use one of my strategies right now. But we
Right.
as a parent can prompt them, right?
Yep. And that's why you as parents are there. You're there to signal, and you might know these tells already. You might be saying, oh, I know exactly what Caroline means. This is what they do, right? And I know that for some kids, figuring out those body signals is tougher. But I do want to say, having done this with hundreds of kids, a lot of times there's other things that kids can learn to point to. Like, this topic makes me silly goofy, right? So I do end up kind of spiraling. You know, there's other ways that we can be spies and figure this out. And what I love about this exercise is that it's fun, and the self-regulation stuff that you learn is absolutely how you learn to self-regulate. It's all about, people say pause, but you can't pause until you learn when I'm at that tipping point, or you pause preemptively. And either way, that is stop and think, and it's the foundation of self-regulation.
Okay, we're getting a couple questions along the same theme in the chat, which is, when we come to the point where my child's behavior is obnoxious or unwanted or dysregulated, they don't take kindly to being told, "Hey, you look dysregulated." That can be triggering. So I'm sure you have some fun, untriggering things to say in that moment.
Yeah, and here's what I would say. This is a role play and a reenactment. So you're talking about this ahead with your child, so you're getting permission. So you're going to work it out with them. And you could even say, I know that you don't like it when I say X, Y, and Z. So I'm not going to say those things. What do I do when you get to that point where your elevator's all the way up? Is it that I can say a code word? Is it that I can do a hand signal? Is there a phrase? One of the things that we want to do is ask kids, because a lot of times they will say to me, you can say this, but not that. Right?
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, we all dysregulate. So I would also ask, and maybe do this as a family, let's pick a code word we can all use with each other. And, if I'm just getting dysregulated, sitting in traffic, or I've got dinner hot on the table, someone's not getting on a video game, someone could say to me taco or unicorn or whatever word we've code word we've agreed on, and I'd be like, "Wait, I'm going to check in. Am I dysregulated? Do I need to like go to the bathroom, take a few breaths, splash some water on my face?" This is for all ages, really, right?
It's for all ages. And here's what I would tell you as a person who has been dysregulated most of my life. I have elephants. I made a video about this recently. It hasn't come out. I have elephants all over my house. They're like cute. And they remind me, they're like a pause button. They remind me to pause. They are anchors, it's called. And when I see the elephant, if I'm feeling dysregulated, I don't always see it, so that's the next question that's going to come, I know. But when I see it, I say, I better take a deep breath.
Not send any emails. I made that mistake.
You don't send the email the day of, wait, go to sleep, send it the next morning, don't send the text. The self-regulation piece of this is really important for our next tool as well. And this is for all ages.
Let's go into the next tool if we're ready.
If we're
Good
ready.
winner, good loser.
Okay. So when you play games at any age, we all know people who have trouble being a good winner or a good loser. And by that, I mean somebody who is able to not brag, not yell, not throw things, not get in people's spaces. They're able to cope and say, this is too bad, I lost. Or if they win, they're not bragging in everybody's face. And we all know adults who could use this exercise. So we all know adults who do these things. And one of the things that I think is that everyone can be working together. So if you have multiple kids in a household, I don't care how old they are, and you feel like everybody could be working on an aspect of this, this is for everyone, right? Even parents. And so the idea behind Good Winner, Good Loser is that we would play board games together and we talk about ahead, what does it look like to be a good winner? What does it look like to be a good loser? And really have that discussion, right? And what's a time when you felt proud of how you acted? What's a time when maybe you didn't feel as proud? If you have younger kids or kids who need this, role play and act it out. What does it look like to be a good winner? What does it look like to be a good loser? What are the things that you shouldn't do, right? Maybe things that offend people or make people feel bad. And I would do this with each kid one on one, because otherwise sibling says to other sibling, yeah, like the time you, and that kind of makes them on the defensive. Their deflector shield goes up and it's much harder. So I would do this one on one, okay? Because the siblings, we know how it becomes. And then what you're going to do is you're going to talk about all the things we just talked about, their inner elevator, how those signals go up and they have tells, how we all have times when we start getting activated, right? We start losing control. And you can use whatever words work with your kid and don't make them annoyed with you. And I like this to be a really collaborative discussion. They might say, I really don't want anyone else to know that I'm working on this. They might say, I really, want you not to make a big deal. Whatever it is, I always collab. Go ahead,
Yeah,
Debbie.
and so I'm just thinking, what are the actual words you would use? So some of our parents might really appreciate a script, and I'm just gonna like take a chance here and just say, a good winner or a humble winner is someone who might feel on the inside like, gosh, I'm so excited, we're the best, this is awesome. But at what point does it become too much, rubbing it in the face of others? And then not being, being a good loser, not being a sore loser would mean, having a temper tantrum or in a huff or yelling at the other team, hitting them, yelling at the coach, which happened by an adult football player recently, maybe during the Super Bowl. Like, what are the actual things you would communicate about being a good winner and a good loser?
Yeah, I would everything you said about the inside thoughts and outside thoughts. I always use recent events with kids and say to them, "Did you see this?" With permission of parents, I have used video clips. I have a fabulous, and it's not fabulous that it happened, but I have a YouTube clip I use with kids of somebody absolutely losing it at Barnes and Noble, to just talk about your impact and how people feel. And I think I would talk about, there are times when you also feel really bad and you feel sad and you're upset that you're not necessarily winning and you feel like other people maybe haven't been as nice or you feel like you didn't get the best cards. And how do you not, lash out at other people, right? How do you, express those feelings, but not in a way that is hurtful to other people? And if you have things you want to talk about with your kid, one of the things I'll say is I've noticed, right? And I always find that they do better if I just say, there are times when we all, when we all get too upset, when we all get too attached to the, end result. And I have had kids get really upset with me for even bringing up the topic, right? But I really think it's important to talk about these things and to talk about this idea of coping with disappointment. And so there's an emotional piece to this. And so, it may be that you have to think of how you're going to do this because of past experience. But the idea here is that we're all, coping with disappointment, coping with our feelings, processing those feelings. You might want to give them some phrases they could use. You know, maybe there's things they say that you're like, not so much. Give them an alternative. Instead of saying it's super unfair, could they say, I'm disappointed I didn't get these cards?
Right, right. And we do have a couple of questions about how not to make kids feel shamed or blamed when we're talking about, you know, being too much in any way. And, you know, I really like this metaphor you're using of the internal elevator. I use a thermometer, but I love elevator too. And I think one thing that's important that is a skill is that, you know, let's say the elevator is going 10 floors. When it's at floor 1, 2, or 3, it's much easier to go back down when before the adrenaline is coursing through our veins, before the blood pressure goes up. So if we can prompt our kids earlier and have this talk that once your elevator goes to floor 5 or higher and we're in full flight or fight or flight mode. Okay, now I'm mixing metaphors. It's harder to calm down. And then it's like a thunderstorm and we have to wait 30 minutes for, you know, for the nervous system to reset. So I think having this whole conversation, whether you use an elevator or a thermometer, about how self-regulation works. And then we could say, hey, buddy, is your elevator on the second floor, third floor, fourth floor? We have like a little lingo we can use in the family. Would you agree, Carolyn?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love that. And I think that your hey buddy is like the best thing ever, because, you know, it softens it. And one of the things I also, that's why I brought up everybody could be doing this, because the whole idea here is you're going to play board games as a family, and you can make them therefore age appropriate for whoever your, you know, family is. And everybody can be working on this skill. And I think having the language of, you know, whether it's that, you know, your thermometer or your elevator reaches a different floor, you know, having the conversation, like, at what point is your elevator, you know, so activated, right? And it might be that they don't know, and that's okay, right? I like these things to be an ongoing conversation. For fight, flight, or freeze, I use a saber-toothed tiger. And this is in Why Will No One Play With Me. And I say, you know, our body's ancient and it doesn't know that there are no saber-toothed tigers. And because they used to be afraid of the saber-toothed tiger, when we have certain emotions, our body is ancient. It doesn't know. It's so afraid that it floods us because it doesn't know there is no saber-toothed tiger, that I'm fine. And I talk about it in those terms. I think it's good to talk about these things. You know, I think it's good to have these conversations. And so you're having this conversation, and I also think you're going to have strategies they can use while they play these games. Now, if your child is really, you know, struggles with siblings, that kind of thing, you can play the game alone with them. You know, I only say include siblings, include the whole family, because I don't want to blame or shame. And I don't want to isolate the one kid, because so many of our kids spend so much of their time kind of being pointed to.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, we need to keep it moving, but maybe at the end we can talk about the rules police too, which is a little bit related. Kids who feel the need to be the rules police.
It is the rules police. It is very related. And so you're going to talk about what strategies they can use. You're going to talk about if they become, right, if they start to become dysregulated, if their elevator starts to go up, if they start to say certain things maybe that they've said in the past, what are you going to do to sort of signal them that it's time to use some strategies to cope with these feelings? And they might, like, just like with Silly Goofy, say, don't you dare say a word. You know, it has to be a code word, it has to be a signal. That's fine. They may want to play alone with you for a while and then move to the whole family. But I have had so many families do this. I have teachers doing this in classrooms, and it really works in the sense that now, as you play the game, you're actually experiencing what you have experienced in the past. Only now you have a roadmap. You have strategies. When you get this activated, you're going to breathe. You can take a walk around the house. You can say, I need a break. You can use these phrases to show disappointment. But you're going to actually play the games now and use those strategies. And sometimes it may be a disaster. That's okay. You know, we're trying to learn how to, in the moment, cope and self-regulate.
Love it, love it. Right, Caroline, moving right along. This is so good. Who is your audience? Rule number three for day four here in Friendship Week.
I thought we were doing teletype story.
Oh, okay. My agenda's wrong. Let's do teletype story.
Okay. So in your hand in your books you have teletype story, and I really love this activity because it's so simple. Some of us, and I resemble this remark, struggle with monologuing, maybe talking too long. Maybe when we tell a story, it rambles on and there doesn't seem to be a point. When kids have to go and do interviews for our older kids, when kids have to go talk to a teacher, when you need to ask a question, right? It always helps if there is a beginning, a middle, and an end. And a lot of times with our kiddos, people are saying to them, you know, don't do this, don't do that, without ever teaching them how. How do you keep it tighter? And so teletype story is super simple. You're going to show the kid the graphic and you're going to say, you know, when we talk and when we tell a story, we want to make sure that people can understand us, that people can follow along, that you're telling people what you want them to know. There's always at the core of every story something we want people to understand or know, right? And you can pull up a story that they like to tell or a story that they've heard and say, you know, what about this story do people need to know? And I often have heard from kids so much, you know, I know everything about. I've never literally never played Minecraft, but I hear about it like all day long. And so I can say to them, hey, when you told me this story about Minecraft, like, what's the thing I really, really need to know? What's like urgent? And then I talk to them about the fact that when I'm talking to someone, I need to think about who am I talking to and how well do I know them? And in my graphic, I say what level of intimacy, but I'm making it more because we have a lot of parents of 9-year-olds and stuff here. You know, I won't use the word intimacy. How well do I know them? And we can talk about that. We want people to understand, and that sometimes people have a lot of knowledge about a topic, and some people have no knowledge, right? But before we tell a story, we want to think about, how much knowledge does this person have? What do they need to know, right?
How much interest?
How much interest do they have? Exactly. So this exercise doesn't, you know, solve monologuing, but it is one step toward people understanding how to tell a tighter story and how to, be less verbose. So one of the things we do is that I have kids tell me a story. And I call this a loose story. So just tell me a story about something that you want to talk about. And usually I clocked one time at like 9 minutes and 48 seconds. Like a lot of times these are meandering, they're all over the place, they lose focus. That's okay. That's totally fine. And then I will give them some feedback. I'll be like, okay, so what did you want me to know about Minecraft? Right? And sometimes I'll explain this idea that there's so much detail, I can't follow it. I'm not sure I understand the purpose of that story, right? And then I will maybe give them a little preview of how I would tell that story. And I try to do it in like three or four sentences. And I try to really hit home this idea of what do you want someone to know? How much detail do they need? Why am I telling this story? And what's interesting is, as we have this discussion, I've had kids literally be like, you know what? Halfway through telling you, I realized he doesn't need to know this. She's not interested in this. Like, there's something about the oral process of like telling this story that's like really good for kids. And I'll tell them the tight story, and then I'll ask them, now, can you tell me that story again? And what happens is they all report they start to self-edit. I'm not saying it's five sentences, it's super tight, but they start to learn to self-edit and they start to be aware maybe that they should. And then my favorite thing to do is to practice at dinner. Have dinners where you say, we're going to all work on a tight story. We're all going to tell stories, you know, that have a purpose and explain to the other kids. And I often sometimes have times where I'll say to people, like, we're going to have tight stories tonight, or we're going to work on this. And just have times organically in your life where you say, okay, in this minivan ride, we're all keeping it tight. We're going to tell a tight story. Because therefore it starts to help them practice. Because we all, I mean, all of us have times where we don't land the plane and the story has no purpose and we go on and on.
All right. The next tool is almost the opposite in a sense. Instead of condensing it down, we're going to learn to build on it. So tell us about build on that, the next tool.
Okay, so I have some little goodies to show you. So one of the things that I have noticed over the years, and I was actually just on Facebook this morning checking out the Bright and Quirky Facebook group for this, and I happened upon another Facebook group that I'm in, and people were posting how they don't really know how to make chit chat, how to build a conversation, how to kind of talk to other people. So it's a very common struggle for bright and quirky kids and teens and adults. And one of the things that people struggle with is that having a conversation is back and forth. It's like playing tennis or ping pong. I say something and then you say something. And the reason I use the build on that analogy is that conversations build. For each comment that I say, you add or build on my comment, in theory, right? If done right. And so I have kids work on having conversations, but I'm doing it in a really fun, interactive way. So I present it to them just like I just presented it to you. And I say, everybody works on this, everybody struggles with this, and that. Each time I make a comment and I demonstrate, you know, when I say, Debbie, how are you? Debbie says something back to me. And then I'll ask her a question. And then she says an answer. And so I role play for them what a real conversation looks like. The way I do this is I take Jenga, so I have my little Jenga, and every time I make a comment or question, we build. And we add to the Jenga tower. Now, I've never bought giant Jenga, but I desperately want it. I have a bunch of coaches that I trained, and some of them have been using this with giant Jenga, and kids love it, but it's expensive, so I'm cheap. The other way that I do this is we use ping pong or tennis. And every time they have make a com you know make a comment, ask a question, they hit the ball back and forth. And what it does is it teaches them that we're having a conversation and that it builds on itself. And I usually give them the topics we're going to discuss. And I usually don't make them their our favorite topics, things we like to info dump about. I usually make them topics that we would talk about if we were talking about things with someone a little more of a stranger or someone who's a new friend. So I will give them a list and let them choose, or I will tell them, oh, we're going to talk about sports. And if it's too much of a struggle, I will allow them to pick an easier topic, but I don't want to do a special interest topic because then it quickly melts into a monologue, and I want them to get the rhythm of Caroline says something, I say something, and that this is building. And I don't start with things that are, I don't have a ton of expectations. All I want is for them to get the rhythm that we're going back and forth and to work out any struggles they might have. So they might be like, I can't think of anything. And Why Will No One Play With Me is full of supportive comments you can make, ways to add to the conversation, questions you can ask to bridge to a new topic. So that's all there for you, in order to have those kind of scripts.
I love it. I love it. And even today I will be like going, I'm not a huge fan of the cocktail party chit chat thing. I think a lot of parents here would probably agree. So if I'm going to an event like that, I'll actually like think in advance, okay, this person has this going on and I can ask about this. Oh, this person's child just got on a soccer team. I want to ask about this. This person is a book lover. I want to ask them what they're reading. Like a little bit of mental rehearsal before I go into an event like that. So, Caroline, we have covered so many amazing tools today, and we've gotten some very juicy questions. So, I want to talk about that. Are we good to transition here?
Absolutely, let's go for it.
Whoops. Okay, great. So, what I would like to do is, first of all, I want to let you guys know why we were able to bring you this event at such a low cost. And that's because it's sponsored by the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab, our parent community. Now, we are trying an experiment in April in the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab. And what we're doing is a buddy matching program. I'm going to talk more about it tomorrow. But if you become a member by April 4th, we're going to ask you to fill out a form of where you live, your child's age, and various interests that they have. And then we're going to group kids by location or interest or age, and then give you a few options of kids to reach out to that the parents will reach out to and start creating a friendship with either online or if you live near each other in real life. So, you need to become a member by April 4th to do that. Casey's going to put the link in the chat, which is brightandquirky.com/FW for Friendship Week dash Idea Lab, IDEALAB. And we're still honoring the promotion code FRIEND in all caps for $29 off of the first month of the Idea Lab. So the Idea Lab is basically what I would have wanted when I was raising my bright and quirky kids, and the resources just weren't there. We bring in experts every month like Caroline. We have Q&A. We have a vast video library, best video library on the internet for bright and quirky parents raising bright and quirky kids. We've got over 300 talks in it. And parents and coaches sharing their experience, so you don't have to be alone anymore. And it's kind of a one-stop place to get all of your information and guidance for raising your bright and quirky child. We are your village, and we love to be that. So, that is sponsoring this event, and we hope you join us in the Idea Lab and buddy matching. It's going to be a fun experiment. Okay, let's hop into questions. So, Casey, we got a few juicy questions. Do you want to ask them, Casey?
Sure, I can do that. That's no problem. Yeah, we
Great.
got some really good ones in the chat. So the first one I have that we saw was this one said, "My son can be very bossy and likes to be in control. And when it comes to games, he'll change the rules so that he'll win. A lot of kids won't play with him now. We've tried role playing, but he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong. How can I help him?" It's a good question.
Okay. I don't know how this will go over, but I've done some things. So I use a lot of humor, which is just my style. And so sometimes when I play games with kids like this, I'll literally just reach over and like take all the cards. And they're like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Well, that's okay, right?" And they're like, "No." And I'll say, "Why?" You know? And so I do a little of that. And then, you know, sometimes they get mad, but a lot of times they're like, "You know, you can't do that," or something. And I'll say, "Well, how is that different than changing the rules?" You know? And so I do a lot of that. I get away with it because I think that they know that I'm being funny. But I think one of the issues here is that he's not stepping into someone else's shoes and kind of realizing that other kids don't like it, right? So I think the more perspective taking you do about everything, I don't just mean about this, every time you see an opportunity to just sort of go, I wonder how they would feel about that. Let's step into their shoes. You know, and I would do a lot of like, so if you change the rules, is that fair? You know, because it's not, right? And continue to build that muscle. And there are lessons in Why Will No One Play With Me for rule police. There's like a whole chapter full of lessons.
Wonderful, wonderful. And parents, if you have questions, go ahead and raise your digital hand. We're just getting through these first ones that came in the chat that I wanted to make sure we didn't skip. So, Casey, one more, and then we'll go to Tristan. And I just saw two signups for the Idea Lab, so very cool. Keep them coming, and we'll put that link in again.
So the next question I had was, any thoughts on good language to use when my teen is physically being a tad inappropriate with me? Also, his hygiene is poor, so it makes me not want to be so close. I don't think he means anything weird, but I don't want to make him feel bad. I usually just try to get away without him knowing, but I feel like I should say something, but don't want to hurt his feelings.
You know, I think these are good talks to have, and I think we touched on this the other day, which is to sort of say, "Hey, buddy, you know, no means no," or "Hey, buddy, I want to just say, like, let's not do that. It makes me uncomfortable." I think it's good to help kids. I think sometimes they're dysregulated and don't realize what they're doing. I think it's important for kids who are more concrete, that we remember that if we allow space invaders and we allow certain things at home, they may not realize and may do it at school. If we can explain and talk about it, I think it's more important. I'll definitely let Debbie weigh in here.
We work a lot with Dan Peters. He comes every second Tuesday. He's just the bomb in terms of clinical psychologist for bright and quirky kids. And he's got a phrase that I love, which is, "This is the way the world works." And, you know, we definitely had some issues in our house with grooming as a teenager. And Not to overuse the hey buddy, but is hey buddy. We gotta not smell when we're in context with other people. Like, we gotta collaborate on a plan on the minimum amount of bathing, washing hair, to be in society in a way that doesn't, the smell doesn't offend other people. And it's just the way the world works. Because then we don't get into lawyering and debating. It's like, and I talked about my experience in Japan the other day, how, different culture, different rules. They soap up in a shower before going in the bath water that the whole family shares, and they have a hot tub. They keep it hot with a, electricity. And I can't remember who I re interviewed about this, but this question has a very autistic flavor. And so to treat it like you need to explain the rules of a foreign country and to say, I'm so happy you want to be close to me. And here are the ways that are appropriate to be close to your parents or family members, and then ways to be close with someone who, for example, is a romantic partner. We want to explicitly explain the rules of the society we live in. Okay, Kristen, love to hear from you.
Hey, thank you. I'm really excited to be joining live today. And
Perfect.
thank you so much for hosting this conference. Really appreciate
Great.
it so much.
Our pleasure.
Especially like if they could, they would, that really resonates with my child. So my son is 9 on the verge of turning 10. And also thank you for mentioning PDA because that term has just come in our realization as a family, and we're just learning about it. And it's made a huge difference just understanding it and understanding, the anxiety behind it and the reactions, that we get sometimes from our child. Just being able to tell him, like, hey, we know what a great person you are, and we know you're behaving this way because my asking you to put the dinner plate on the table filled you with anxiety, and it's changed our world just by acknowledging his, that anxiety is behind that. So that's been huge, and thank you for mentioning PDA, because I just think I in this world I think it's a pretty new term. My question is, so social anxiety. My son goes to a very small micro school. He has friends from before social anxiety kicked in. So it kicked in pretty textbook around age 8, where feelings of unworthiness, wondering if people are making fun of him, et cetera, and withdrawing from the group. From what I've observed at his very small school, the kids really do want to embrace him. They want him to participate, but he feels intimidated by a few older kids, and so he withdraws and won't join the group. And the school wants to do anything they can, and they're asking me for feedback on how they can intervene and how they can help him. So I wanted to open up that question to you.
I have some thoughts. Caroline, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll just go and then Debbie. So I'm thrilled the school wants to intervene, and I'm thrilled that the story is that they want to help. I don't know how knowledgeable they are. Different educators have different levels of knowledge. I would love to see him able to be with a group of safe peers to do some of these things so that he can feel confident and he's not as intimidated. Because sometimes in a bigger group, in a group with older kids, it's much harder. I also feel like I want the school to implement some things to help him feel more comfortable so that he has, fidgets or he has a weighted blanket or he has different things that can help him feel more comfortable and safer. It's great that people want to embrace him, and I would love for the teacher to reinforce that, and maybe help him, find some peers who he could be with and feel more comfortable, And I'd love to give him a little script of things he can say. I also want to know more about how he feels so that we can give him whatever tools. So if he feels, I don't know what to say first, I don't know what to do with my body, whatever it is, so that we can give him those tools or those prompts, and then he can feel a little more comfortable. Debbie, what do you think?
All right, I'm going to chime in that, and I don't know your son, but generally speaking, when we have signs of social anxiety or anxiety in general that may meet criteria for a diagnosis, the gold standard for treatment is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, plus medication. Now, what happens in cognitive behavioral therapy is exposures and suds. So we do little micro exposures to a slightly anxiety provoking situation. We ask the client, you know, on a 1 to 10 scale, how anxiety provoking is this for you? And they gradually, through these exposures, when done properly, expand their comfort zone little by little and sort of learn how to have an internal dial so that they know how to regulate their exposures and get more comfortable. So, you know, if I were working with a child on this, we might start on YouTube looking at different scenarios. We might do a chart where we put different people in the classroom in different quadrants and say, you know, interacting with different people, what's your SUDS number for this person versus that person? And what could make that SUD number lower? So we're going to give a child a vocabulary and tools for learning how to navigate that anxiety. So if we don't have a therapist doing CBT, I would recommend bringing that into the mix.
Okay. Yeah. My son has OCD, so he is in exposure therapy, but I'm almost wondering if he should be getting different exposure therapy, that like maybe the social part is more important right now than, you know, some of the OCD part.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you, Tristan, and that might really be a reason to reach out to that therapist and say, hey, I might want to reset our goals for counseling and reprioritize what we're specifically working on. And I, you know, granted, I don't know the full situation, but that sounds like a great idea.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, you bet. You bet. All right, let's take Carmi's question, and then we're going to wrap it up. And then we have our members only post-session coffee. If you've become a member, you're more than welcome. It takes about 30 minutes to process your application. So just reach out to Casey at support@brightandquirky.com. We'll send you the Zoom link. And Casey, let's go ahead and put the IdeaLab link in there again. And you guys can tell. So what I just did with Tristan is we will let you know if we think you would benefit from some local support, in addition to what we teach in our parent learning community. So you sort of get the tools for what do I do next? We're able to answer that question. All right, Carmi, love to hear from you.
Okay, thank you. I had posted this in the chat as well, so sorry if it's repetitive for some of you who had seen it, but my daughter dances competitively. She's 9 years old, and an issue that we've had in the past is that she is probably one of the hardest working, most talented kids on her team. She gets hugely disappointed when her team doesn't place, or if kids are making mistakes during a competition. And this has resulted in her like huffing and puffing off the stage at the end of an event, and her teammates are left feeling kind of, you know, well, not kind of, but really bad. And she's just incredibly frustrated and angry. So how do I teach her to be a good loser on a team?
Oh, I love this question. And it does, it feels bad when something happens, you know, whether it's a sport or, you know, dance, whenever you're
you're doing your best, but it doesn't work out. It feels hard. So what you're talking about is that she's having trouble coping with that emotion, and her go-to has become stomping off, right? And we all have go-tos, right? We all have sort of the thing that we do. And I would argue, and I say this from so much experience with myself and my kids, like that's the thing we often need to work on, right? Because sometimes it's not a healthy go-to. And so one of the things I would do is I'm going to use "Hey, buddy," because it's the best thing ever. "Hey, buddy, what do you feel in those moments?" Like I would ask her what she experiences. I would ask her, how big does that emotion feel? So here's one of my beefs with the emotional tools on the marketplace is, as a person with ADHD, it doesn't matter whether it's you should feel a little bit. You feel like it's huge. And when I talk about this with younger kids, which she's still younger, I use like giant yoga balls and stuff, and I'm like, does it feel this huge? And you can use your hand. And my guess is for her disappointment, that emotion feels just enormous, right? For kids who have trouble, I just want to say this for everybody, with this and with pinpointing, you can use drawing out a scale, you can use an emotions bank. There are many, many of them out there. That can so that they can see a visual, right? And then I would ask her about this go-to. And I'd just say, like, "Hey, I've noticed," or, "Hey, buddy, sometimes you get really, upset when the team loses, and I notice you leave the stage." I wouldn't even get into right away, like, other people have feelings about that. You can't like that team member, all that stuff. I would just focus on, asking her kind of what she feels in that moment and if she ever thinks of doing something else. Because she might say, "I know that that's not the best, but it's like, my go-to." And then I would say, if she doesn't say that, everybody has a go-to. And I would use a personal example, right? Whatever it is, I sometimes get so upset, and I just, you hear me in the car, I swear, or I do this or I do that, right? And then I would ask her, what else could she do, right? And I would try to come up with a plan. And look, she's on stage or she's at this arena or wherever she is, it's hard. But if you can come up with something else she can do and she can start practicing it in moments of disappointment, because we need to replace that go-to.
Okay.
And storming off probably means she goes into fight, flight, or freeze and she flies.
Okay.
Caroline, I have an idea. I wonder what you think of it.
I'd love to hear ideas.
Okay. This could be a budding superpower where if she has a certain, and I'm thinking of like Tom Brady. Like I've seen some videos that when someone comes on their team, he's like almost like assistant coach, like, "Dude, you need to do this and go over here." And I'm not saying she should tell other people what to do, but what if after practice he could sort of write some bullet points down of, if she were the coach, what she would tell these different people? And then maybe we could even have a conversation with the coach that, this 9-year-old's very, observant and understands what level we're going for. And could she potentially send you a little email every week on the tips she would give other players if she were the coach?
Okay.
What do we think about that?
I love that idea. I mean, I think as long as the coach would be open to it, and everybody has different personalities, but I think some of this is about fight, flight, or freeze. Some of it is about control, right?
She can't make every one of her team members do what she wants. And so what I love about Debbie's idea is it gives her back some control, right? Maybe there is a superpower here where eventually she's going to become, I mean, my daughter didn't do what your daughter does, but she did Irish step. And, you know, as she got older, she became one of the girls in the class who were boys who, you know, coaches the youngers and says, line up and do this and do that. And so sometimes the kids who are aware of what went wrong and that something went wrong and what just happened here, they are the kids who kind of end up stepping up, which is what I like about Debbie's idea.
Thank you so much. You guys are really awesome.
Oh,
thanks, Carmi. Well, we hope you join us. We have a lot of fun like this. And I noticed someone in the chat mentioned the SPACE program, which is an anti-anxiety program for parents for kids who, for example, with PDA might not flourish with CBT, or maybe you do both. But we have a great talk with Ellie Leibowitz, the founder of SPACE, the SPACE model, in our video library. So that is there for you. All right, Claudia, let's get to you, and then we're going to wrap up. And Casey, let's put that link in one more time to the Idea Lab. If you guys geek out on psychology like we do, come join the Idea Lab. We're so happy to be your guides through this journey.
Hi, hello, thank
Claudia.
You.
Hi.
I am a member, so if Caroline is going to be there, I'm okay if we postpone and I will be coming back in the cafe and ask there.
Okay,
but
let's ask there. I remember you well. You're the dancer.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yes, let's talk to you in the next coffee. That would be great. I'm going to take
So she's going to be there. She's going to be there, Caroline.
Oh, let me ask Caroline, are you going to be there today?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
fabulous.
So I can do that at 2:30 so I don't delay you now. And
perfect. Thank you for your consideration. All right, you guys. Thank you so much. Tomorrow, we're going to weave all this together, talk about next steps. We're excited to wrap this up tomorrow. It's going to be fantastic. Love to see you in the Idea Lab for buddy matching, for coffees, for guidance, all the good stuff.
Debbie,
all right, take care, everyone.
Debbie,
oh,
wait
yes.
1 second. We didn't do our yeah. Starbucks giveaway. Yeah. We got to give away
Gosh.
Presents.
Okay, we do have to give away presents. All right, whoever's left, we're going to give you a $25 card to Starbucks. Let me think fast. Let us know what tool resonated the most with you today and why. So don't just name the tool. Give us a sentence or two. What was your big aha today? All right. And April, I see your comment. Please email us at support@brightandquirky.com. And Casey's the guru who looks at that kind of thing. All right. So many good ones already. Whoops. I just clicked the wrong button. Okay. All right. Let's see. All right, Elizabeth, build on that. Both of your boys struggle with monologuing. You're going to need coffee to deal with all that monologuing. All right. Please get, if you could just private message Casey really quick to give her your email address so we can send you the digital Starbucks card. That would be amazing. And these are so great. I'm going to read the chat after the session. Thank you, everybody. Great session. And we will see you either in the next session or tomorrow. Take care.